everybody. Welcome to another episode of South Sudan and the World, where we interview remarkable individuals in different areas of walks of life around South Sudan and the world, making their impact on South Sudan and the world. Today, we have a very special guest. We have an honorable minister. With us today is Honorable Paul Tibiet Ayang, the youngest minister in the Lake State Cabinet, and he's the Minister for ICT and Postal Services in Lake State. Lake State is located in the Barhazar region, and here you're going to listen to him. Honorable Minister, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Akon, for inviting me to your show.
Yes, it's good. It's good to have you. You're a young minister. How does it feel to be a young minister in a country that we perceive as dominated by elders?
Well, it's not easy. It comes with pros and cons. It's exciting in the sense that you get to be involved in the leadership and decision making that is as a young person, but it's also challenging in terms of finding yourself in an environment that you must really have to treat very carefully. People who are different, who are almost like your fathers, people who are almost like your mothers. So it's an environment that is quite difficult, but you must behave, you must really pull up your socks to be able to be in such a place. So it's exciting because it's a duty, it's a national call, I must
say. Okay, that's good. So tell us briefly about your upbringing and your childhood. How was that like? What led you to, before we get into the politics, before we get into your career, how was your upbringing like?
I was born in Yerul, in a village called Mok of Yerul West County. And then I went to the cattle camp. And in 2002, I joined Kombodi Primary School of Opodi, a village in Yerul West County. And then later on, that's where my childhood was. I studied in Opodi of village of Yerul West County until 2008. That's when my uncle took me to Khartoum for the first time for me to see a capital city. So I stayed there for 3 weeks, and then I came back to Juba. Later on, joined a secondary school in Juba. So. But my entire upbringing was in, the childhood upbringing was in the village, in Yerul.
Okay, it was in Yerul. And yes. So what was your educational experience like? Did you go to secondary and university in South Sudan?
Yes, I studied my primary school in Yerul West Town, in a Kombodi, in a missionary school, a Kombodi missionary school, up to primary 8, and then I came to Juba in 2010 to join secondary school, Jubade National Secondary School, and then spent 4 years at the secondary school. And then in 2014, I graduated and joined the Catholic University of South Sudan and graduated from the Catholic University of South Sudan. So my entire education is homegrown.
So when did you become politically active? When did you start realizing that politics is something that you wanted to do?
I started joining community work, then later on graduating to political activism during my primary school. We participated in youth activities, first of all in the parish, in the missionary pastoral center. I was an active youth leader in the parish, and then in the school, I held different prefectorial leadership positions, and then graduated into youth politics, Yerul Youth Association, and different association, community youth association at the regional level, and then in 2017, I was appointed into the SPLM National Youth League office as the Deputy Secretary for Information and Culture at the National Youth League office. And then 2 years later, I was seconded into the National Secretariat as the Public Relations and Communication Officer of former Secretary General then acting Secretary General Comrade Jema Nuno Kumba, who is now our Speaker of Parliament. So that is my, so I, it was a very gradual process, starting from, you know, community volunteerism, you know, doing a lot of community work. We're organizing events at the community level, organizing youth activities, and involving in community social activities such as, you know, marriages and all that. So it has always been my passion to participate in anything to do with serving the community. As early as from the age of 13. So it has always been my passion to serve the public, in particular anything to do with the people, whether invited or not. It has always been my passion to live a public life.
Okay, so when you graduated college, you immediately started getting into politics with the SPLM, this SPLM Youth League. You started getting to the national secretariat level. How did you become a minister in the state? What was that process like? Because you're working at the national government and now you became a minister in the state. How did you go from the national to the state level?
Well, I did not just get appointed as a minister. When I was at the university, I was combining two, working at the party level and as well as pursuing my studies. So in 2017, when I was appointed into the SPLM National Youth League, I was in my second year at the university, you know, at Catholic University of South Sudan. So as I do my work, party work, I was also pursuing my studies. So it became a process that I was very passionate about, to balance work and school, not just work, politics. For that matter. So after I graduated, I was already now at the party headquarters. And then when Governor Rinkin was appointed, I was in 2021, Governor Rinkin is one of the key leaders of the SPLM, was appointed to go to legislature as a governor. By then, I was in the SPLM National Secretariat. So he called us, a team of young people, to go with him and be part of his secretariat. I then become his executive secretary. And then in 2023, in June, I was appointed as Minister of Information of Lagos State. So that is the process, that is the stage it has taken. But then again, you don't just have to get appointed. A lot of betting is required. You must be betting. Where loyalty lies, your credentials, the SPLM National Secretariat, people must go through your file, as young as I was. So my appointment wasn't easy. So Governor Intenyobol had to present a number of credentials why I should be appointed as a loyal cadre of the SPLM. So it was not easy for me to get appointed as a minister. I must say I thank my governor, Governor Intenyobol, and I thank the SPLM leadership. But also, I must equally say this is what every other young person of South Sudan deserves. You know, young people of South Sudan are qualified to be part of leadership, to be part of decision making in this country. So that was the stage it has taken. So it was not easy for me to be appointed as a minister. It had to undergo a series of scrutiny for one to be appointed to a cabinet at the state level.
You're appointed a minister. You go to the state, you take the oath of office. What are some of the biggest challenges that you face upon the assumption of your office?
You know, working in, as a head of an institution like the Minister of ICT is not easy, because as a young person, one of my biggest objectives or dream is to succeed in this role. It means I must deliver not only as a young person, but also as one of the leaders in the state. So the challenges are many, ranging from, you know, the environment that we are in as a country. You know, stability is not there in terms of what should enable my work. But of course, we have to try my role. Remember, my role as an ICT minister, also I'm the spokesperson of the state government. And given how volatile our situation is, I'm always ready at any time to, you know, to answer to things, you know, that are of my responsibility on behalf of the state government. So it is not easy, you know. So you must balance with the public and with the government. And also you must deliver services in terms of policy making and also in terms of generating ideas that enable the smooth running of the ministry. But it has always been quite challenging.
So within your capacity as not just a youth leader, a youth representative, how have you engaged South Sudanese youth on the political and economic process? How have you really pushed for young South Sudanese to be included in the political process?
As a young leader in cabinet, so my role has always been to advocate on behalf of others to be appointed to different political our leadership levels, whether at the state or the national level. This includes me when the sun arises. I always give my recommendation to other competent young leaders, and we have done this in the state. Quite a number of young people, I say through our collaboration with our governor, have gotten into key positions of leadership at the state, county, and even at young levels, at different institutional levels. So this is to identify talent, in my opinion, and ensure that young people must come up together. You know, we must move as a block to ensure that we serve our country. So we started with engaging with ourselves as young people at the state level. And as you can see now, for us in Lagos State, we have a very good number of young people now at the national level, although we need more. You know, and in the cabinet of His Excellency the Governor, if you make a rough assessment, I would say proudly that 60% of the cabinet now are young people at the level of the director generals, even the ministers, county executive directors. You know, these are young people. I'm not saying that these young people came directly through my influence, but most of them, the talent we have identified and recommended to the governor where necessary, have always been included in the decision making. So I'm lucky to say that I'm working with a leader who is also passionate about youth empowerment, not only the lowest level, but even at the highest level of government.
That's very good. You have really played a big role in pushing for young South Sudanese to be included, and your efforts have really been supported and been welcomed. Recently, you were a youth delegate to United Nations General Assembly in September. Tell us about that experience. How was that like?
Well, that experience, of course, as you can remember, myself and you, of course, we were very fortunate to be the only youth, South Sudan youth delegates to the UN General Assembly in September last year. The experience was very good. The experience was very good in the sense that you get to represent young people at the highest level. That was a global level. And we benefited in terms of interaction, networking, we benefited in terms of experience and exposure. And we also we know that it comes with a level of trust, feel trusted by our country to represent our country as young people of South Sudan. But also, that wasn't enough. We called for more youth representation at such forum, because that is the only way South Sudan can harness its talent. You identify talent, and you also, you know, develop trust, instill trust in your younger generation. So it was a very good experience getting to be in New York with you together, and of course meeting other young African talents and the world at large. So the experience was good. So only that, we should have been more young people represented. At UNGA 78, that I must say.
You know, this is some of the things that a lot of people don't understand, is that giving youth opportunity doesn't necessarily mean you're taking opportunity away from older people. It's just preparing the young generation to lead for the future. And one of the biggest arguments against youth representation has always been age and inexperience. But if you look around the world, you can find that you have a lot of young people in key positions of power. If you look at now, the president of France, you can find the prime minister of Ethiopia, and yes, different governments around the world, you have young people. There has been sort of like a phobia from many South Sudanese that the youth are not ready, they're inexperienced, they shouldn't be given a chance. What do you say to people who say that?
Well, I think that is not even legally that is not that argument is not acceptable. Actually, even our own constitution, the South Sudan constitution, says that, you know, from the age of 18 and above, any South Sudanese is qualified to hold any public office. So this argument that is being advanced by some elements to deny young people the right to participate in their own country is not acceptable. And I think our president, His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardit, has made a very serious commitment towards youth empowerment. As we can see now, some of the key ministries, like the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Petroleum, several of the secretarial positions are occupied by the young people. That is commendable. So, you know, this is something that we must reject as young people of South Sudan. We are not saying we must take all these spaces, but we are saying we only need our space as youth for us to be prepared as the generation whose future of this country depends on. So we are not saying that we want to take over the country by force. No, we are only saying we must participate. You know, our participation is something that is constitutional. It's a duty, and it's a national right of every young person of South Sudan. So that argument is illogical and even is not legally binding, because the constitution allows every South Sudanese, the age of 18 and above, to be part of any political office, provided that they are competent, of course, yes, and then they must display qualities, you know, that merit them to be part of any public participation.
Okay, very, very good. Now, going back to your work as a minister, what are some projects and work that you're undertaking in your ministry to improve the ICT sector in Lake States?
Ever since I was appointed, I champion digital literacy for the young people in Lake State, for the youth in Lake State and the general public, and also girls in ICT. So we now are building a public information center, and we are working through different partners to ensure that at least in Lake State we must have one public information center. Remember, Lake State does not have even a single public information center, and I believe across all the states of South Sudan, where digital literacy becomes the basic. You know, this is 21st century, I call, and the modern economy is now very much relying on digital literacy. Young people at the secondary school level, and even at the primary school level, it is their basic right to have access to digital literacy. For instance, a young person, a youth, every citizen in this age and time should at least know how to turn on, you know, and off the computer. So, which is not the case. In Lagos State, over 95% of our population have no access to digital literacy. They don't own computers, you know, and according to the 2016 National Bureau of Statistics population estimate, Lagos State has population of 1.3 million. And if 95% of this population has no access to basic computer skills, how do we improve our local economy? How do we have access to digital services, to e-commerce? You know, how do they even understand matters of e-government? You know, these are things that are in my capacity, my direct capacity as a Minister of Information. But of course, it is challenging because we do not have resources. But we must strive by all means to build at least one public information center equipped with computers and with affordable prices. We are also engaging with partners to ensure that most government secondary schools have computer laboratories. And we are thankful the German embassy provided us with 20 laptops as tier one of the key achievements that we have made to one of the secondary schools in Lagos State. So we are doing what we can to ensure, in my capacity as a minister, to ensure that digital literacy is something that must be realized by the young people and the entire public.
You mentioned something very important in the issue of digital literacy. When we talk about digital literacy, it means we have to change the way we approach education and preparing young people, because we live in an age where internet is becoming a right. Having access to internet is just as important as having access to food and water, because without internet, you are not integrated into the global economy. You're not integrated into the world. And many South Sudanese don't look at this aspect. The way we approach education, the way we approach training has to change, because now you have young people who have bachelor's degrees, but they don't know how to use a computer. So when they apply for a job at a company, at an NGO, at an embassy, at the government, and you have to submit your CV, some of them don't have emails, and this is a challenge. And so I applaud you for really taking this initiative. And I would ask that you go further to do more awareness campaigns to ensure that secondary students in Lake States and across South Sudan are giving access to computers and how to use the computers, how to type, how to turn off and on the computer, and how to use the internet, and how to use resources on the internet. Because nowadays with ICT, what is taught in the best schools in America, like Harvard or Yale, or the best schools in UK, like Cambridge or Oxford, can be taught. Like right now, you are in another place, I'm in another place, but we're talking right now. These are ways that we can enhance technology, enhance training. And even for you within your capacity as a minister, you can have people come and train digitally. They don't have to be there physically. So that's really good work. Going to that, on top with ICT, what do you think the role of fiber optic can play in to the States? Because as we've seen recently, you've seen a push that they want to ensure that the States have 4G network connectivity. What is the, just give me an overview of the telecommunications sector in Lake State with the fiber optics, the telecommunication companies there, and the access to telecommunication services for Lake State citizens.
Thank you, Colin. You know, roughly, Lake State is not badly off in terms of basic communication infrastructure, telecommunication infrastructure. We have nearly 100 telecommunication networks, different networks, Zain and MTN, to be specific. Gemtel is yet to come. Digital is yet to come. So what we are doing now, but most of these boosters are concentrated in major towns of the state. So the rural areas have no much access to communication. So this compels people in the remote areas to come to towns to access communication. So recently in my presentation, the National Communication Authority workshop organized by the Director General, where I recommended not only in Lake State but across South Sudan for us to ensure that rural connectivity is realized. People must go to the remote areas, you know, not only concentrating in town but bringing communication closer to our people in the remotest of our areas. So this is because what you said now that communication is a basic right, just like as eating food, but not just communication. You know, improve communication. By improve communication, that is why we encourage investment on fiber optic. You know, fiber optic allows a space for broadband communication. For instance, just like you having a VA, but we have no fuel inside the VA to enable the VA to run smoothly. So fiber optics is important in a way that it allows a high volume of communication, to effectively. So, but with the telecommunication network, so these boosters, their capacity is low. So, having fiber optic enables very effective and efficient communication because the amount of waves, it allows is higher. So, but now the entire country, maybe only Juba, but most of the states have no fiber optic. But thanks to the DG of National Communication Authority, that it is in their plan, the National Ministry of Information, to provide fiber optic across the country. So in the state, the communication, yes, basic communication is there, but internet is still low because there is no fiber optic. Most of these networks, are congested. You find a network in a town, but also congested by population. So most of the time you have internet that is very low. This is because we do not have enablers of effective communication such as fiber optic. So it is our hope, because of course investment on fiber optic, requires, is expensive. It requires It requires a lot of resources, and that is why it is a role that must be taken over by the central government.
Okay, very good. Now I ask you, what are your priorities as a minister as we look forward into your young leader? You're taking you have a very serious ministry under your wing that you have to manage. What are key priorities for your ministry?
My mandate as a minister of information, of course, is very clear, being the spokesperson of government and also being someone who heads a ministry that is tasked with the role to ensure that citizens of Lagos State have the right to access accurate and reliable information, accurate, effective and timely information, public sensitization, matters of civic education and policies of government, and as well as providing service delivery that is related to ICT activities. So now, my priorities for this year is what I mentioned before. We are planning to really establish information offices in all the 8 counties of Lagos State. By establishing information offices in Lagos State, is that at least each and every county must have a public computer center, you know, public computer center that allows youth, particularly the youth, to access basic computer skills, basic computer training, and also be able to at least teach them how they can write their resumes, and also how they should apply for jobs, you know, how to access internet resources. But broadly, as a policymaker, priorities now is to ensure that Lagos State as a face, you know, Lagos State identity and what our values, what we do as a government, you know, is reflected at the national level, you know. So my job is not only to become the spokesperson, not only to deliver services, but also to ensure that Lagos State, in terms of political stability, in terms of our local economy, must be displayed so that all South Sudanese are attracted to Lagos State in terms of my priorities now is to ensure that we establish a very effective communication office at the state level and at the county, at the county level, so that whatever that is happening across all the counties of Lagos State, you know, is clearly communicated in a timely manner. So it is also to interact with the public and make the public know that, you know, government is public and public is government. So it is my mandate as a minister to ensure that, you know, effective communication and key messaging is always, you know, is always carried out for people of Lagos State to know what is their role and what is the role of their government.
That's very good comments, and it's good to you mention on that. You're also the spokesperson of the Lagos State government. And recently you have seen the turnaround in Lagos State. Your governor has been awarded the best governor of South Sudan for the past 2 years by the civil society organization CEPO. And people have seen that Lagos State has been turned around from a state that has known to be very violent to a state that has sown relative peace. What do you attribute this to?
It's on the record, it's a public record that the success of Lagos State was not only the work of the state leadership. It's not only the work of the state leadership or the governor himself, but a collective effort by the citizens of Lagos State, by all the stakeholders. You know, since 2005, after the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, Lagos State experienced a series of intercommunal conflicts, revenge killings, that actually graduated into a very bad, violent structure. The violence became structural in nature. So when His Excellency the Governor of Reimpeñable was appointed in June 2021, so he called on all the stakeholders of Lagos State, all the citizens of Lagos State, so that people can sit down, you know, collectively and agree on how to resolve this conflict that was consuming the state, that was badly destroying our identity as a people. So people agreed that bad must be punished, wrong must be punished, you know, accountability must take place, leadership must be to provide services to the people, that security of person and property is a basic right of government, you know, and people must agree and people must work collectively as the youth the youth, the women, civil society, government partners such as the UN. So we both work collectively to ensure that the peace and stability is restored in the state. And more importantly, the support of His Excellency the President, Salva Kiir Mayardit, in providing the necessary logistics, you know, to enforce law and order in the state. So thanks to our governor for being a leader that works in a consultative atmosphere, and that is, and that I must acknowledge, is the basis of the current stability in the state. So a leader must work in consultation with all the stakeholders. It doesn't matter how young or old, but you see, we must both acknowledge that each and every citizen has a role to play, you know, in the development of society.
What would you say to people who say that the method deployed by the national or the state government in dealing with criminals is barbaric or not in line with international community best practices?
Governance is not a one-way traffic, I call. And what could be barbaric? Lagos State could not be necessarily barbaric. For instance, in Eastern Equatoria, or what could be barbaric in South Sudan cannot be barbaric in the United States. But what is to be underlined is that there is no government that intends to mistreat its own people. You see, there is no government whose objective is to oppress its people or kill its citizens. So what was happening in Lagos State is that if someone, a law-abiding citizen, you know, cannot be touched by a government. But if someone has become an outlaw carrying guns, you know, someone is armed, you know, killing people, regardless of their identity, that person is no longer a citizen. That becomes an outlaw. That becomes a rebel. That becomes a criminal. And there's no way you deal with a criminal other than using the very means which is necessary, and that is to use force. And force is a legitimate right of a government to use against, you know, people that deter public order, elements that deter or public peace. So we have not been barbaric in any way in Lagos State. I must refute. So those were our detractors and people. Whose hope was to ensure that Lagos State continues to, you know, to live in perpetual conflict throughout.
I think also another thing many people don't understand is that the state has the monopoly on violence, and many of the critics who argue about the methods deployed by the Lagos State government have to then go look and say, okay, when hundreds of people were being killed in revenge killings, nobody was speaking, nobody was advocating for it to end. And so within our situation as South Sudanese, sometimes we have to look at what are ways that you can maintain law and order, especially when law and order is taken out. When you have anarchy, you have to restore law and order. Before we talk about anything in South Sudan, we have to talk about security. And that's a harsh reality people don't want to accept. And that's security ensuring that not just people are safe from rebels or oppositions, but also civil security, where people are safe from criminals, from petty crime, from theft, from robbery, from murder. And part of this is to deter people from doing these things, and people are being punished. And you're seeing in Lagos State now where people are being taken to the court, people are being punished, people are being sentenced to prison for crimes that they're committing. And it's giving the state a lot more legitimacy, because now people perceive Lagos State government as very serious about crime. Whereas in the past, people have even blamed the government for not being serious and allowing the intercommunal fightings to take place. One of the biggest things that does promote intercommunal violence is that people, when they feel as if when their relative has been murdered and there's no recourse, believe the only recourse is they have to take it themselves. Such as if my relative is murdered and I go to the state and the state says, you're on your own, I will be on my own. I'll handle that myself. But now, if the government says, Paul, yes, it's unfortunate what happened to person X, but as a government, we're going to handle this issue. It's not your business. It's not your job to settle the scores. We arrest the culprit, we take him to court, and we sentence him to death, to life in prison, to 20 years. That's our job. But the people responsible for committing these crimes will capture them. So what you've seen is that you've seen a reduction in the need for vengeance, the need to settle the scores. And so I think that's a conversation many people don't have, is that the state has to enforce its will. The state has a monopoly on violence.
That's correct. That's correct, Akoya. And you see, that's where they are getting it wrong. Even we have lost in the state, you know, we at the state level and at the national level. And if at all the lost, the Lake State Administration, you know, has contravened any powers being either the local, the state or the national laws, this is something that could be raised by our justice system. But what the state administration was doing was to act in the best interest of our people, because of course there were cases that have accumulated to a level that you cannot imagine. The whole family could be wiped out, you know, and that is not normal. That is not the essence of human rights. So a state government, the role of the state is to protect its own citizens. You see, so, but this is an argument that we must put across South Sudan, not in a legal state. You know, South Sudan now is in crisis because wrong is not being punished. People are left to behave the way they want. People are left to commit crimes and go unpunished. There is no country whatsoever the case. And you know, development is interdependent on the stability of the country, and there is no stability of any nation whose citizens do not fear law. You must ensure that law, no one is above the law. And the highest form of crime, capital crime, is to take away a life of a person. There is no any crime on earth that surpasses killing of an individual innocently, of an individual citizen innocently. And I think this is where many people are getting it wrong, and this is where we must rethink and redefine our governance system as a people and as a country, to ensure that we must protect our people first and foremost. Before we can talk about democracy, before we can talk about human rights, before we can talk about advanced things, our basic responsibility as a government is to ensure that we have a population that is protected and that is healthy. It is this population now that will have the talent, you know, to be harnessed to develop the country. And if you have a population that is killing itself, population that is sick, population that is not protected, population that is not confident about what it will invest in its own country, we don't have development, we don't have a nation. Basically. So I thank you for your comment, and I think this conversation must be carried on, and we advise ourselves that what is happening in Lagos State is people's driven leadership. You know, it's a people's driven leadership, and we have laws in the state. We only have an effective leader that does not entertain a wrong that is punished. And you know, and we have a state parliament, we have public order that was passed, you know, to protect our young people. People are not. Another thing is that why people are not talking about the good things that are happening, you know, protection of our girl child, proposed and early marriages. They are not talking about it, because they know they don't talk about something good. You know, they don't want to talk about the local economy that is improving. They don't want to talk about the freedom that our people are now enjoying, the farmers, the cattle keepers. You know, even the people that are passing along the highways. They don't want to talk about it. They only want to concentrate on what derails peace and stability of our people. And this is why South Sudan is not stable. People don't want to talk about something good. People only are singling out what is negative. And this is something that we must stand up against, especially as young people, because the future belongs to us. The future belongs to the young generation. The future belongs to the young population. And South Sudan is a very young population. So if we don't take up roles in our country to ensure that we protect dignity of our country, to protect the peace of our country, to contribute in the national building of our country, there is no miracle coming from anywhere. No one is coming, you know, to help to us in a golden flatter, you know, a South Sudan that is developed and prosperous. It is the role that each and every one of us plays that contributes in the nation building.
And I think that's the biggest thing we need to really start pushing back on is, I'm glad that you defended the position of your government, and you've proven to yourself that you stand firm of what's happening within the states. Because people from the international community, people who aren't familiar with the situation in Lake State, always have the most to say. But as long as you are able to serve the interests of the people, then that's the priority. And I believe the interest of the people is first and foremost. And I was going to say, within your capacity as Minister of Information, how do you encourage young people to have constructive conversations about politics, about public policy, as opposed to very negative conversations that focus on negative, focus on insults? How do you try to guide those type of conversations?
Thank you, Akwali. See, it is a very big responsibility to become a responsible citizen in a way, and especially in most African countries that are very fragile economies, the needs of the citizens are not met. Citizens are always, you know, met with a lot of frustrations. They have not access to basic services such as education, health, you know, and other necessities. So to really take up a responsibility and become a responsible citizen in a very fragile environment like this is a very great virtue that one must take up upon themselves. But nevertheless, being a citizen, okay, does not only mean being a citizen in good times. You must become a good citizen also in bad times, particularly when your country is met with difficult challenges, such as economic challenges that we are in now. So we must take up roles. That is what I would say. We must take up roles regardless of any level, regardless of our level of education, whether being a teacher, whether being a health, health officer, whether being a farmer, whether being a cattle keeper. So the responsibility is that you are serving. The responsibility that comes with it, and it also comes with a level of patriotism, that we must be patriotic as South Sudanese. You know, just imagine those the generation that is above us now, like our late chairman of the John Garang-Dumbiro and our current president, His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardi. If they had given up, you know, fighting for nearly 30 years to liberate the country, you know, without anything, we wouldn't be talking here now. To become a good citizen and contribute nation building is very important, as opposed to being very negative, agitating your own. Of course, yes, we must also voice our concerns in terms of governance, how our country is being run. You know, that is something that we must, as conscious citizens, and we must do that objectively, with hope to improve, not to destroy. You know, with hope to develop, with the hope to ensure the stability of our country, but not to bend down our country. So, for instance, the role that we play now in the social media, as young people that have access to social media, is very negative. So we must use the social media to enlighten our people on how we can, you know, develop our country. We must, the role that you play now, how do we ensure, how do we teach our people the importance of digital economy? How do we train our people to use internet to generate financial resources? How do we train our people to use internet to enlighten, to carry out civic education campaign on certain important topics? So this is how I believe, in my humble opinion, we the young people should contribute in the development of the country. You must approach issues objectively, knowing that tomorrow it doesn't matter at all where you are today, but you can become a national minister, you can become a commissioner, you can become a governor. But if you do not live by the values that you want to impart into the public, so what then are we doing? So we must be objective, knowing that this country belongs to us. We have no other place. This is the only country we have. So we must partake in public discussions objectively, object when in negative politics, even by our own leaders, even those of us who are in government. If what we preach is not compatible with what we practice in public offices, we must be objectively criticized so that we improve. You know, so this is the standard that we must set as a generation. That is tasked with the responsibility to modernize our country, because the generation that is now facing out, their task was to liberate the country. We are now tasked to ensure that we develop institutions of a country, to modernize a country, to liberate our people from illiteracy, ignorance, and all this. So it is our responsibility to be very objective. So, but it will become very impatient, and ensure to an extent that we would rather burn down our country because things are difficult now, then that is not a good thing to do, in my opinion.
What would be some words of inspiration that you'd have to a young South Sudanese who wants to be a leader, who's interested in politics?
Self-development and self-organization are important keys to of any leadership. And leadership does not necessarily mean being a politician, but we can be leaders at different levels. What is important is that let us educate ourselves, let us have a positive education, let us ensure that we are citizens that reach out, citizens that have networked, let us be able to network, let us use the social media platform, you know, to know ourselves as young people, to identify ourselves, to identify leaders within our generation. Let us be citizens that inspire ourselves. Let us be citizens that they speak hope to our people, you know, because it is now very difficult. There is a lot of negativity that is going on, and we must be able, it doesn't matter who's looking at us, to inspire hope at every level that we are in. So this is my message to the young people of South Sudan, those who are aspiring to become leaders and professionals at different levels. So we must have, you know, the ambition, first of all, you know, to grow. This is our country. You can become anything in this country. You know, those who are going to the airspace, if you don't have the dreams and inspiration, you have the opportunity to represent South Sudan, because South Sudan is a very young talent. Anyone that is organized, anyone that is prepared, can represent this country at any level. So we must organize ourselves. We must effort that this country will move forward, and this country will be prosperous.
This country moves forward and this country will be prosperous. Before we wrap up, I want you to say some words to South Sudanese youth. What is your final word to South Sudanese youth listening to this?
My final word to South Sudanese youth, Colin, I think this is a topic you have not brought on board, and forgive me, is that let us prepare our country for elections. You know, young people now must prepare themselves to elect their own leaders, you know, that they will hold accountable. It is important that as one of the basic responsibilities of a citizen is to participate in the democracy of electing your own leaders. So this is the only peaceful means where we can exercise our most powerful right to elect leaders of our choice. So we must also prepare ourselves for leadership. Let us come forward. You know, let us be very vocal. Let us come forward to contest for positions legitimately, not in a way of rebellion, not in a way of killing ourselves or incitement. But let us be prepared. Let us have innovative ideas. Let us have agenda as young people of South Sudan and present it to our leadership across the board and to our people, that young people of South Sudan have what it takes to participate in public, the highest leadership position of the country.
Is South Sudan ready for elections? Many people argue South Sudan is not ready for elections. Is South Sudan ready for elections? What do you say?
I believe South Sudan is ready for election. Why? Because you know, this is a matter of matter of commitment. You know, there is no time in history, and I must repeat without peer contradiction, that a nation will ever be ready for election. So you must only be committed to conduct elections, because this is a responsibility of a government to ensure that leadership is elected. Leadership is contested in the most legitimate form, and that is election. So South Sudan is ready for election because our leadership is committed. His Excellency the President is committed. And I believe Dr. Riek Machar and all others that are in the opposition must also be ready. So this doesn't require rocket science. It is a matter of Riek Machar, okay, in the opposition, and our president in government, in the SPLM, coming together and accepting the fact that they have a responsibility to give back power to the people of South Sudan, to re-elect them and give legitimacy to them. So I believe South Sudan is ready for election. And those who are saying that South Sudan is not ready for election are those who want to run this country in official peace agreement so that they continue to establish an elite form of government that exclude the majority of people of South Sudan from participating in their own in the affairs of their own country. I believe our people are ready for elections.
So South Sudan is ready for election. Now, I would say this. When you talk about elections, you mentioned something very important. The key theme of elections is giving legitimacy to leaders and governments, but also giving power to the people. Because during an election, the leaders have to stand before the people with their ideas, their policies, and their platforms. And then they must share these with the people, and they must convince the people to vote for them. So when you are an elected government, you say, my power is derived from the people. If I'm an elected governor, elected president, elected MP, elected council of state, I will argue and say, the people of my area elected me, and I have the power based on them. Right now in South Sudan, you have power based on the size of your rebellion. Meaning that if you rebelled and you were able to pressure the government to sign a peace agreement, you were giving a percentage in the cabinet, a percentage in the legislature, a percentage in the state governments. Therefore, now the leaders that we have, you can argue, the revitalized transitional government of national unity was not elected. It was formed. So in order for us to have a hands-on development plan, to have a government that has a mandate from the people, you need elections. That's important.
What would you say
to people who argue that we should extend the agreement?
You see, these people are planning for a time bomb for South Sudan, because the citizens, in one point, will be tired of this government of peace agreement, and then the recipe is disaster. So we must give power back to our people. And then look at it this way. We now have a bloated government that we are not able to finance. Because why? It is a government that is not legitimate in terms of our democratic principles. So we must elect governments, and that is the basis of democracy. Election is a key ingredient of democracy. So these people must know that it is our responsibility to set our country to the path of democracy. So but you cannot continue to rule our people through agreements. This is unpatriotic. It is not acceptable to me, in my official capacity as a citizen of South Sudan, not necessarily as a spokesperson of the government of Lagos. This is unacceptable for us to continue to run our country through agreements. You know, we must conduct elections. We must accept the outcome of elections that come, and we must commit ourselves to accepting that democracy is the only way for us to guarantee the stability of our country, to guarantee a political majority in our country. So let us not instill fear in our people that once we conduct elections, you know, X is going to win, X is going to rebel. That is not acceptable, because these people must not hold South Sudanese hostage. This is our country, and every citizen, whether born or unborn, have the right, you know, to live in this country, have the right to participate in this country. So we have also the opportunity to guarantee a safe environment where the generations to come must find conducive environment for them to feel proud as citizens. We cannot only be able, you know, to guarantee a country that is insecure, that is not stable. No, this is bad. And I must say, without fear of contradiction at all, these people are unpatriotic, and they want to hold South Sudan hostage for their own self-interest. That is not acceptable.
Now, last question. What would you say to young people who want to run for political office, but they're told they're too young, it's not your time yet, but they have an aspiration to be leaders? What do you say to them?
You know, there is nothing too young. The argument for being young is a very latest thinking that not even our constitution, as I stated earlier, allows. So young people must prepare themselves. You must organize yourself, but also you must ensure that you are someone who has the backing of your constituency. And that is why elections determine two things. Number one, people who have, you know, genuine connection with their grassroots. Number two, people who are competent enough to deliver services to the people. So elections means also you'll be assessed as a citizen. What is your personal contribution, you know, at the local level and at the national level? No, so it is important that we must prepare ourselves now, we evaluate ourselves as young people, and we must do it within the confines of the law. You know, this argument that young people contest during election is a legal argument. You know, it is a natural right for us as citizens of South Sudan, young people of South Sudan, to contest and participate in public affairs of our country. So we must prepare ourselves, we must have the dream, we must have the aspirations. Okay, but in a very objective manner, not in a way that degenerates into incitement, into violence. No, let us speak to ourselves. Let us dialogue with the elder generation that is ahead of us. So let us dialogue. Let us persuade ourselves for this country to move forward. We must work together. And once again, we thank our president, because our president has demonstrated that the role of the young people in South Sudan is critical. You know, so we must dialogue with ourselves as young people, and we must also dialogue with the generation that is ahead of us to ensure that we both participate and move our country forward.
We have to participate and move our country forward. That is Honorable Paul Chibiet. Ladies and gentlemen, as you've heard, if you are a young person interested in politics, run for office. Don't fear. Let's take our country forward. If you are somebody who who doesn't want the best for this country, please stay away. But as always, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Paul, for the great work that you're doing for South Sudan and the great work you're doing for Lake State. You're not just an inspiration for Lake State youth, you're an inspiration for all youth. I am somebody, I'm not from Lake State, I'm from Upper Nile, but you have inspired me and you have really always been an advocate for me and advocate for many other youth that I've seen all across South Sudan. Continue to do great work in technology, in governance, and in youth issues. And just know that people are watching you and they're inspired by you. And to our listeners, please follow our brother Paul. You can find him, Paul Chibiet, on Facebook. You can find him on social media platforms. You can find him speaking as a spokesperson of the Lake State government. And if you have any questions, reach out to him, reach out to me. And as always, thank you for joining in to South Sudan and the World, where we explore the dynamic impact of South Sudanese that they're having on South Sudan and the world. Tune in next time. We love you guys. All the best.